I'm Christoph von Tomme, and welcome to the API Resilience Podcast. If you've ever wondered what it really is we do when we do APIs, and if you've wondered how APIs change organizations, our communities, and our society, look no further. This is the podcast you've been searching for.
Welcome to the API Resilience Podcast. Today we've got a very special topic, something a little bit more out there, but I'm really excited about it because it's about developer portal architecture, but it's about a lot more. I've got two guests today. I've got Henk Belt and John Doyle here today with me. And before we get started, Henk, can you maybe tell a little bit about what company you work for and how that is connected to the composable web?
Yeah, thank you very much, Christoph. Yes, I work as a solution architect at Amaze.io, and it's more and more in my path that I meet companies that are asking about the composable, if our platform is composable, if we can help them out. So that's more and more coming on my path.
Cool. John, can I ask the same from you?
Yeah, of course. I'm John Doyle, the CEO of Digital Polygon. And we focus on helping brands or enabling organizations to spread their message through content. And more content needing to be composable in and of itself is coming up with more platforms and more channels and more places to push that content. We're seeing a need to shift into this composable web space where we have more flexibility and more ability to manipulate what we're doing across channels. And really excited to be talking about this topic with you today.
Cool. Thank you very much, John. So, and before we really go into the nitty gritty and like go, you know, explore things, let's start off with some definitions. So I'll first start with Henk. Can you tell a little bit about what you understand under composable web? What does that mean for you?
Yeah, and it's a long story short. I did something around the composable also. And for me, it's like if you have a monolith that you want to split up in little pieces, more like talking about Lego blocks that they're interoperable. You can like change them out whenever you like. And it's much, much easier to have smaller pieces to work with that.
So it's like, it's a way to break monoliths into smaller pieces.
Yes, that's how I see it, yes.
Okay, John, for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think along the similar lines with Henk here, breaking down, being able to build and architect things so that they can be broken down into smaller pieces and then be made to be interchangeable, I guess, so that I can manage the smaller components and scale them as needed, as opposed to combining them all together. So if we talk web, instead of, you know, coupling my content with my display layer, being able to separate that content from the display of that content allows me to reuse that content in multiple places or scale my brand into different avenues. And we see this a lot in, you know, normal product development with microservices are a good example of composability and how we break up these monolithic applications into smaller services and pieces that can be interchanged and moved around. And really excited to see a lot more innovation and progress happening on the web space and really around content is where we're focused. But seeing that distinction of things getting broken up is really awesome to see.
So, and the reason why I got really excited when I read, and then I shared my excitement with John, and we had a really good talk about it. But like, I got really excited when I read Amaze's article about composable web, because we're working with Amaze for ever since we started doing developer portals as a service. We've been partnering with Amaze for our hosting, because the Kubernetes infrastructure and you know, the managed infrastructure just really helped us to deliver high availability hosting for our customers in a way that we didn't have to deal with the full complexity of that. And we're a fan, let's say it like that. and then when I saw Amaze, when I saw you guys starting writing about composable web, I was like, oh my God, this is awesome, because I've been thinking a lot about this in connection with complexity and on how to manage complexity, and manage complexity not as in removing complexity, but as in how do you utilize complexity to be more adaptive and resilient as an organization. So composability was something that meant a lot for me. And then I was like, oh, look, this partner started now we're talking about this and started getting a lot of traction on it. So it's really, really exciting. Can you maybe talk first a little bit, Henk, like where did this start? Like how did you guys started thinking about composability? I know Gartner talks about this, mm-hmm. and then there's you know, it, to some extent is a buzzword that's out there. But how did you guys like really figure out like, oh, actually we have a composable solution. We should be promoting it like that. How did that happen? Yeah.
Well, it sort of automatically went that way, because if you look at Drupal, or the more recent versions of Drupal, it's API first. It's like easy to go headless with Drupal. It's like a way to go headless with Drupal. And it sort of rolled into composable. And if you look at the platform that we have, you can have like multiple projects, and they can be separate projects which you can manage on our platform. Yeah, you can like easily build your solution on that. You don't need to go to different vendors. You can all have it under one hood. And that's when we started thinking about composable. That's a short version. I think that's how we went to composable.
For people that don't know Amazee or don't know our hosting stack as much, so Amazee provides hosting solutions on Kubernetes clusters, and they've got an open source solution for orchestrating all of that stuff. And Lagoon is the open source tool for that, which is really cool, because then you can have an end-to-end open source stack from hosting until dev portal. Anyway,
I think that's quite amazing. That's quite amazing to keep in the same words. But yeah, it's like a real open. It's an open solution. Like you choose on which platform you want to host. Is it like AWS? Is it Google Azure? Whatever you'd like, but also the layer Lagoon, which is open source, that lives before Kubernetes, makes it very easy for developers to start using Kubernetes for their composable solutions.
The reason why you're different in the Drupal ecosystem, hosting ecosystem, is because the container layer, the Kubernetes layer, is to some extent still available to the team that is doing the development. So you're able to like add an additional container where it's like, we've done this with one of our customers, a PDF generator, or you mm-hmm. can add, like I've seen some of your publications about large language models that you could be running in your cluster, and that you could be adding to your composable stack. So basically you have this ability to have this Drupal application that is like your CX content management system that has an API first architecture today. And we've talked about this with John. Right now, I recommend customers, when we start talking about developer portals, that they shouldn't go decoupled first. They should start with just native Drupal, you know, get to know the ropes, get some of their content already in there. Like if you're just starting out, like don't straight jump into the additional complexity. But that you have this ability to like start in a simple monolithic way, then turn that monolith or dev portal monolith into a backend, a CMS backend for decoupled frontends. Could be one frontend, could be multiple frontends. And then basically you can keep developing and evolving what you're doing on that. And then you can keep adding additional applications or capabilities into that same hosting environment, and then you know turn it, compose it all together. And that's for me, that's such an exciting story because it gives this progress, this ability to not to just be stuck in one path, and the ability to evolve and to grow things from that.
Yeah, very, very to add on that, very short. Anything that can be like containerized can be also be hosted or can be can work in your solution. So it can be a separate project, so to say, as we call it. Mm-hmm.
I think building on that, right, the modularity of Drupal and the open source technologies, right, it's composable in itself. I can add or remove features. I can add or remove integrations. And it's kind of how the open source product was built. And it's awesome to see Amazy do the same thing with the infrastructure stack. And you think of it the same way as module components coming together. We can grow it. We can scale it. Like thinking about it, there's a lot of emphasis on open source projects to be modular and to be composable so that different use cases around the world and across industries can come together and leverage that solution for that product. And something that's maturing more in the market, right? I started talking about a lot about headless and decoupled because those are the concepts being used in the CMS world. At the end of the day, it's a way to organize your systems to be more composable, right? And Drupal is a great example that I can build in a monolithic way, or I can build in a headless or decoupled way in a composable model for the actual content that I'm putting out. And having that optionality is really powerful. So, and you know, one of the things that I think is interesting here is using the word composability versus headless or decoupled is good because it means I can choose what I want. It's not one or the other. I think this is something that's really powerful in the fact that the technology behind building that functionality is also composable. That lets you really have it at every layer of the stack. When you look at Amazy and Drupal and even your front ends in front of it and the integrations you can do there, which just leads to a really, really powerful stack for optionality here.
You said something really interesting, John, because I think we have even talked about this sometime in the past, like modularity in Drupal versus modularity in WordPress, that these are very different concepts and that modularity in Drupal really is composable. You're adding capability, and now this capability spans across your whole application. Like you're adding multilingual and now all your stuff has multilingual as a capability. You're adding access control and it's pervasive. It has advantages and disadvantages because it increases complexity of the application you're building. But the big advantage is that it gives you a really powerful tool that you can do things with, really, really interesting things. It's not like you're putting in a web shop plugin and it's like one page on your site. And then, you know, it only lives inside of that container, but it actually changes the whole application. And this is how I understand it as a non-developer. Is that like a good characterization of what composability means inside of Drupal?
Yeah, I think that is a good option. Like a good way to explain is I can plug in my module and that module can extend to either just the small part or the entire application set. And I've got the ability to choose how it's going to integrate and what it's going to support. I think the same thing goes for WordPress. I think there's some nuance between the two platforms. One was built on paid platforms. So building all-in-one solutions that don't require any really developer integration or experience, just plug and play, focused on bloggers and marketers. Drupal was more formed on free and community-driven creation without the paid support behind it. So it's more of a framework to implement these things and incorporate them in. So it's really interesting to see the two solutions and how they integrate with the wider ecosystem. Depending on what stack you're using WordPress, some of these things go across huge swaths of content. And in Drupal, a lot of times it's also trying to support all of the mainstream plugins, right? So, you know, I've got translation and we want to support all of our content modeling variations. So it used to be field groups. Now it's paragraphs and blocks and layout builder and all the other, the ecosystem that is kind of matured in that space. So being able to do that, pick and choose what content building support I need, but also have my core multilingual or commerce integrate with those different pieces, I think is really powerful. And it gives you the ability to choose or even extend something someone else did to integrate with a new one that you want to work with. And having that power, that flexibility, not being locked into to other people's roadmaps, I think is a huge selling point of this and really defines composability in terms of application and technology. I think there's a lot of power there.
I think it also adds with Drupal, when I started learning Drupal back in the days, it also adds lots of, for me, complexity to the whole thing. Because if you look at Drupal, there's like so many ways that can lead to Rome, to your end solution in this case. And also coming back to Drupal itself around modularity, but also the multi-site environment that Drupal has, I think that's a big plus. I think I don't know WordPress that well, but I think Drupal stands out for more like the enterprise solutions also from what I've seen in the past. But yeah, just wanted to add the complexity. I think that it's great, but also there's like a lot of people having same ideas. And also long time ago when I worked at another company, I didn't have time to program, but I was able to build like a quite a nice solution only with the modules available. I didn't program anything at all, but still it took me a lot of time to work it out.
I just used this analogy the other day, but there's not a single Drupal site I've built where I wouldn't have done something better or changed it how I built it the next time. And I think that's true to this day. I've been working on it for so long, and you know, there's always something new. There's always something to learn and a new way to do it. So the complexity is also something to keep in mind. And you know, as we mature the solutions and build recipes for doing this, I think it's important for us to share it. And that's where some of these products came from, right? Even Lagoon was, how do I scale and host my Drupal applications? And then open sourcing that, building on top of it. I think there's that complexity breeds innovation and ways to enhance that for sure.
But that complexity is kind of inherent to the domain, right? Because like if you're starting from scratch, you're still going to end up with complexity. It's just that there's only one developer who understands it. It's just like, and if you're working with a platform like Drupal, then hopefully more developers will have a basic notion of what is it you're actually doing here. You can mitigate it with good documentation, and like there's a lot of stuff
and a great community.
Yeah. So I think that complexity never goes away. You can push it someplace else. It's about how do you utilize complexity? How do you utilize your complexity budget in a smart way so that it serves you instead of punishes you. I think we're all three of us, like I'm now 18 years in Drupal, I think, something like that. I think both of you are more than 10 plus years also, right? Yeah. Yep. So we're Drupal veterans. So sometimes we hear people talk in the community that are like, Drupal, yeah, this old PHP stuff, like why would you want to even touch that stuff with a poll? How do you see that in your piece of the world? Because this proposition I'm positing here, this is what sometimes developers will say, or we sometimes hear developers say, it's like, you really want to do a PHP developer portal? Like, really? Both of you are more active in what's happening in the marketing sites, where there's more JavaScript professionals that are doing interesting things with front ends that are more decoupled, more or less decoupled. Why do people still use Drupal in that piece of the world?
I think there's a number of reasons for Drupal to still be a player in this space. I think first and foremost, it's open source and there's a large community around it. It's a mature product. Drupal does content management really, really well. And it has a great data model for pulling that content in, structuring it, and then allowing you to render it. And you know, just like anything else, you can abuse that model and you could build your entire site out of just a single WYSIWYG field if you wanted to. But I like to think that the content modeling is and the flexibility around that is extremely powerful. Plus the work that's gone into Drupal 8, Drupal 9, Drupal 10 on making it more API first. Now I've got the optionality to build monolithic and then also scale that into a headless or decoupled application for where it makes sense. So one of the things that I'm helping organizations with to work through is like we don't have to take this stance of headless and decoupled or monolithic. Let's use the right technology for the right application. Right? Like there are times that I need a marketing page that's going to go up for 3 months or 3 weeks or 3 days for an ad campaign that's going to go away. And I don't need that to be scalable. I need to be able to build it fast, be creative and get it out tested and be done. And then I've also got, you know, evergreen content or blogs or company information or product information. Like products, e-commerce is a really good example because there's a lot more longevity in that, a lot more complexity. So taking that content, building it into a system that I can use it across my developer portal, across my actual commerce store, my other marketing content, and having that be consistent, I think gives you the ability to work with both. And if you can use the same technology, keep the same teams that are familiar with that technology stack to support both of these, there's a lot of power in that. JavaScript is awesome. I like using it for front ends and even getting into some of the application development with it. I think some of the challenges in that space is it moves really fast. Things come and things go, and things get deprecated and not supported anymore. They haven't built up the same longevity of the community and support. I think we're getting there with some of the larger applications, like I don't know, Angular, React are really solid, and then some of the frameworks out of them are have that longevity that are building in. But I think that's some of the reason why Drupal is really sticky in this marketplace, because a lot of people can build on it for their current needs, but then can scale it to the future. And it also gives you that optionality between the two. I don't need two different CMS platforms or three different tech stacks to do it. I can keep within the same technology stack and extend it into other places. I think that's powerful.
You hinted at something that was also a key point of the article you put out. You hinted at this, there's certain layers of your stack that are moving faster than others. And like there's some layers that you want to move really slow because you don't want to be migrating all of your content every year or every few months or years. I think that the core idea was, and obviously it's not just three layers, but it was this idea that like you could have a CMS layer, which is where you're storing all your content in a structured format that is like, you don't want to touch that too much. It's evolving and you have to maintain it and so on, but you don't want to build like experimental features in that layer. You want to build your experimental features maybe in like your top layer where things move really, really fast and where you're changing things all the time. And then you might have like a middle layer where you have things like an e-commerce solution that you're composing into your stack. So I think that was kind of like the background of it. Yeah. Have you seen customers doing that kind of stuff in the marketing space? Or like there was at least one example that was in the article, but how have you seen your customers do this so far?
I have seen out of my head one customer changing out the search engine they're using, and that was pretty straightforward, to be fair. So this like that's a fast mover. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I think prime areas for thinking about this composability are intake and lead forms that enable you to change out how you take in content, what backend systems they go to, switching out your CRMs, but also having that flexibility to easily change and adapt the intake process to optimize conversions. And I mean, that's what the marketing team is focused on, is getting more people to convert, getting more leads. That's what they're based on. Search is another great example. Having that, a lot of times search within Drupal or even core Solr is limited by the technology that's built there. And there's applications that go much, much further in allowing you to optimize that and also enabling your marketing teams to configure it without developer interaction. And we haven't spent a ton of time in Drupal building that same capability in as much as we have on the CMS space. I think there's opportunity to do that there, but being able to do that, do cross-site search, be able to integrate content from a bunch of different technologies and platforms into a combined index and then expose that, I think there's a lot of use cases for that out there. Mm-hmm. And thinking of these things as components to your website as opposed to, oh, I have to do it all in Drupal is really freeing up organizations, saving them time, saving them money, and empowering their teams to do that. There's also times where there's pieces of your website that are much more important and need to move faster from the content perspective. So campaign landing pages and engagement pages, things that are going to convert leads more so than your evergreen content. Those are things that I'm seeing people take into some of the newer frameworks because speed matters. It's not that you can't do it in traditional PHP or Drupal or other technology stacks, but it's much more mature in the JavaScript native React frameworks to have better user experiences and more optimized, easier to build user experiences that you can take to market faster than traditionally. And that's where I see the most usage out of this composability and separation of information. And commerce, I think, is a huge player in this. So separating your PIM information, your product database from your content management system, but combining that information together to go and sell it and market it is a really, really powerful use case that I think fits really well into this as well.
I think it's like typically like unique experiences, like where you're really trying to create this wow effect where people say like, oh my God, this is delightful and interesting and special. Those are the things you built.
Unique or like extra complex, where I'm either duplicating content because I have product information like Shopify or Salesforce or my PIM solution, and then I want to market that same content in my website or push it to my developer portal, right? Being able to integrate that together and reuse it or consolidate it and, you know, think of it, this is my main source, but my content management system can decorate it and then expose it to display on the front end and have flexibility and optionality on that is the future of content. And I think a lot of the ways traditional websites are built, it combines the display layer with the content modeling and the content structure. And that really sets organizations back. I think that the future of brands and the future of web is content, right? As things become more and more, as the marketplace becomes more crowded, data is more freely available. That content is what's going to separate you from your competitors, right? That's how you're going to reach your audience. That's how you're going to communicate with them. That's how you're going to win your audiences. And keeping up with that across so many new channels and attention changing between different marketplaces, you really do need this structured content and structured data and the system to pull it all together and then expose it. And monolithic approaches to websites just really limit you on doing that and moving fast. So I see the composability of the technology and the scalability of being able to go from 20,000 users to 1 million users a day. That pushed composability on infrastructure. That was the first step. Now it's okay. Now I need to take my content and put it across 2 channels today, but 30 channels next week, because I've got a bunch of new startups and attention's moving from these social media platforms to these other ones. And that's kind of the next phase I see of this composable content, composable information systems, and combining these data sets together. I think that's kind of where I see that marketing space going, that content going, and scalability of brand and content to keep up with the increasing demand and the fact that marketing teams typically aren't getting a ton more budget to go after more channels. It's about efficiency and optimization in that space as well.
And this is what's going on the marketing sites over the world, because we're like most of our audience are joining from the developer experience side of the world, where it's more developer marketing, which is still a little bit different from typical marketing. Developers also love being delighted, obviously. They're a much smaller audience than your typical marketing audience. So often, you have to be careful how much budget you want to spend on these things. Similar things hold here also. And I think also like as developer experience is becoming more and more important, because it's like, everybody's becoming a developer, or everybody's is creating their own experiences to some extent. I guess this is evolving, and we might see more of the marketing stack or this evolution that we've seen happening in the marketing side of things also happening in the developer marketing side of things.
I think with technology advancing, low code, no code becoming more and more prevalent, and us being able to build more APIs, more interfaces, more products on top of other people's products more easily, right? The marketplace is getting more saturated. It's not enough to have an API anymore. And organizations need to start thinking about APIs as products just like they do anything else. And who's going to buy that product? It's going to be, whether it's developers or product owners or whoever it might be, the fact that you've now got almost this API and data and information as a commodity, or it's getting to that point because I've got so many different people offering the same set of services, the same set of data or comparable data. being able to stand out in that crowd requires marketing. It requires marketing teams. Having the information, having the developer documentation, and like, that's not enough anymore. And I see this trend continuing to increase. And I think a lot of this comes from some of the experience we had at API Days earlier this year, Christoph, and like, you know, a lot of the learnings there was there's so much information, like so much going into streamline your APIs, build your APIs, make this really easy, get it out faster. But now you've got all these organizations doing that. How do I hit the market and how do I target developers to let them know that my stuff exists? If I don't have that relationship, if I have 15 competitors now for the same types of APIs or the same payment gateways, like that's a good example, right? How do I let them know that I'm here and I have a better product than all of my competitors? You need marketing content to do that. And you can't have your developers write that. Even if you're marketing to developers, it needs to be more than that. You need to hit different channels. You need to go to where they are. You need to do the research. And I think we're going to see a lot more, I guess, teamwork or collaboration between marketing and tech and products. And you know, I know that I'm also trying to get out some information on this, but the balance between IT and marketing still. They see things, the world in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So yes. The fact that this is becoming a bigger and bigger need, I think, is opening the door to a lot more conversations and a lot more ways to how do we scale our content? How do we work together with these different teams? And it's not a new problem. It's applied to a new application, a new set of audiences for a new set of tools and technology. And I think the work that Pronovix is doing and Amazee is doing and Digital Polygon is doing kind of bring these pieces together, I think, really sets us up for the future of this. So really excited to continue talking about that.
I want to take it a little bit more towards like developer experience, because we hinted at it, that also Amazee is in the business of creating developer experience. This is a very different developer experience, because it's the experience of the developer that is deploying applications. Can you tell maybe a little bit more about that, Henk, and what you have seen, like what is it that Amazee is doing different, or how is this all in the CNCF community? Like, because that's a big deal there. Can you give a little bit of background on that? What is the general knowledge you can extract from your experience with the Amazee platform? When people come to ask you like for developer experience, like what is it that they're looking for exactly in your case?
If you go technically, it's like around feature branches and everything. That's like automatic environments they get with that. Mm-hmm. Also like cost reduction, like non-prod environments, they go idle automatically. That's mm-hmm. also one part of it, of course. But also like what we said earlier is having multiple projects under one umbrella. Like having a Drupal site, having a React application, having something else under one umbrella, and be able to work with multiple developers in that under the same umbrella. That's, I think, one of the big pluses I hear, at least, I advocate for also.
Mm-hmm. So that you can run different types of applications managed by the same team?
Also.
So you said earlier that people started asking you for composability. Like, was this before you made this step in positioning? Did people already ask you about that, or was this after you started talking about it?
For me, it's more like what I said before, it's like automatic. It's like people started using, and I recently we got more questions like, oh, but what if I have this one small application that needs to like talk to the main application, and what is that? Is that, and that's a separate project. It's supposed to be a separate Git and but you can all run that under the same umbrella. And that was a recent discussion we had around like, how do we approach that? But it works sort of out of the box. There's no changes needed.
So people were asking for like, oh, I've got this weird extra thingy that I also need to run. Can you host it? That was the question?
Yeah, that was the question. Like, we got this little service running somewhere. Can we also add that to the same stack? And it was like, yeah, you can. And that was like, started the whole composable discussion. And of course, yeah, you hear composable in the market, of course, a lot. But yeah, it sort of fits.
So and then the label like, how did you come with this label for that? Because it's a very, very specific one. Is that, do you know that, what's the thought process was behind that? Or
it's a composable, for me, it was also a bit of a buzzword at a certain point. And everyone was like, oh, composable, we're going composable. And it was like quite a while back, even when I was not working at Amazee. It's like, what is composable called? It's like, yeah, it's like headless, like small. Yeah, it's like a new like thing happening. And in the fast paced world we're in, it just fits at Amazee to that.
Yeah.
It sort of automatically went well.
Kind of like, oh, that's what we're doing. that's what you call it.
Yeah.
So we live in this space, and most of our audience are from this space where is mostly API developers or people that are building APIs on top of existing infrastructure or things like that. Also, often teams are like tasked with implementing some sort of API management solution, and then also with creating a catalog from that. And what I often have seen and heard is developer team that's like, oh, it's just another website. How hard can this be? Let's just, you know, put something together. Do you see this kind of evolution where people become like accidental project owners, and then, and now it's like, oops, now this thing is evolving and growing. What do we do with this? Do you see some of those come to you? And then what would you recommend to people that are about to start building a developer portal before they get started, that they should take into account to make sure that they build for the future?
Yeah, so on the developer portal space, I think this can be applied anywhere, but specifically for organizations that are getting into their APIs, wanting to take them to market, the first step is always, let's get it out there. Let's tell the world about it. Let's do something, in a lot of cases, to POC it out, right? Like, we want to test that this is actually going to work. And a lot of times this is where you come up with your kind of one-off solutions, your let's get the content out there, let's market it, let's test it, right? Then you scale, right? It's a success, and you keep building on the application. You have more features, more products, more sets, and now it's, okay, this isn't manageable for me to do one-offs for every single product or every API I have, and I need to be able to scale this. I need to be able to update my documentation because my development team released new features to my product and my marketing content is selling something we deprecated 3 months ago, right? And now you get in this place where I need to, how do I keep consistency across all of these different sites I created and these different platforms that have the same information? And that's where you start seeing a transformation, right? I went from small, medium business to large. And there's things you need to change in the way you operate to be able to do that at scale. The thing I always talk to my customers, prospects, anyone I talk to about is like, where are you in this process and what do you actually need? Right? Like, if you don't need the enterprise solution and all the bells and whistles, then let's start with something that's simple, that meets the needs for today, and then we'll scale it to tomorrow when you need to make that shift. And I think there's not a one-size-fits-all solution here, but as organizations mature, you see them go through this transformation and the need to scale their content and rebuild the way that they've done this in a new way to support the new ecosystem that they're in. You know, I think just like any other tech, that you see this in web, you see this in like CRMs, you see this in applications, same sort of problem applied to another space. And that's how I like to look at it.
So I think, Hank, there's a hosting complement to this question, right? Because I think like we'll see developer teams that are managing like a small API or that are managing a single API spec, they might put it on an S3 bucket or something like that, or just go for some of these cloud artifacts that they're just consuming like without any kind of management layer inside. Like how do you see like Amazee's role in that kind of transition from, okay, you get started somewhere, and then as it evolves, you need additional resilience built into the system so that you can do things. Is this something similar that you're seeing with your customers also?
Yeah, the thing comes to mind is like the auto scaling, like from Kubernetes auto scaling, the features that's automatically you get with it, of course. that's, I think, one of the big plus when you have Kubernetes on our platform. Of course, when it's good to start small, and then if you grow bigger, look for a other solution or grow with the solution that you have, because you can also start small and then grow wherever you are. But yeah, I think that's the main thing I can see here regarding hosting.
Hank, you said something about, like, as an example of composable, like what a composable stack allows you. Like, I've seen this, and you said also something about some experiments where you've been doing with large language models. Can you maybe tell a little bit more about, like, what you tried exactly?
Yeah, our CTO Michael came across it, and he's like really into the subject, and he was like, "We need to do that. We need to try. Can we host models on our platform? How easy would it be to add it to our solution?" Solutions, I must say, and when they started working on it, I think out of my head it was 2 or 3 days they got it in, and now we have a few customers, not many, testing it out, and it's very easy to add it if the platform is composable and you run into new technologies to add that to the platform. And yeah, I think that's really great to see that it's happening right now, and we're already testing it out. So there's not a big product roadmap. It's just someone comes with an idea that's really cool. We need to try and see if we can do that. And it's happening like in 1 or 2 weeks without large product meetings and everything.
I'm also curious about the results. So how good is
it? I will let you know.
Yeah. Very, very, very interesting. It's I have been kind of like, careful about it. I think it's a really interesting experimental feature
to be able to move that quickly to test it out and talk to some of our customers and say, like, okay, we have this new feature, do we want to test it out? And it's an easy thing to do with the platform we currently have, like I said. So yeah, I think it's worth it, and I don't know where it's going. No idea,
Hank. Like, in your experience, because you've been doing Drupal for, as we said, like, it's more than 10 years. How many years is it exactly?
Oh, a very long time. It's like, I think, 15, 16 years.
16 like years, that.
Yeah.
So in those 15, 16 years, can you have you seen examples of organizations starting with composable architectures? And like, and what are the caveats? What should you watch out with? Is there a good way of doing it, or is there a bad way of doing it?
Yeah, I think in my opinion, I think you should always start small. If you start and if you do like a revamp of your current site solution, whatever you have, start small and see how composable fits in your organization also. How do your teams work? How do you collaborate? What solution do you have in-house? What solution should change? But start small. And maybe one example I worked with in the past is an e-commerce customer with Drupal and Magento. And they had like a big Drupal instance, and then they started talking about like the changes needed. But they already had such a big system that changing that to composable is a big chunk of work, and it's like very hard to do. The only way I can see something like such a big project to go to composable is just pick one of the smaller sites in the whole architecture you have and start there, and then work your way up to the other sites, because you can't do that with a big bang, I think. That's my opinion.
So it's not the, oh, let's burn down the monolith and like make everything microservices.
No,
a really bad idea.
No, please don't, because you're going to burn yourself.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the story repeats itself, right? Like, it's not much different in concept from moving from on-prem to cloud, right? You have this huge ecosystem of things that you need to address. And if you try to do it all at once, it's going to fall over. The same thing happens with your content, your ecosystem, and your products, right? Like, take the pieces that are primed for either needing to move faster or or kind of siloed that can be changed and have teams that are ready to move forward with that, build them in a composable way, and then start incorporating out the rest of the products into it and follow the same framework on what worked and what didn't. And, you know, just like our Drupal experience, every time you go through this process, you're going to learn something and you're going to see a new technology or something new is going to be out there and you're going to want to try it and incorporate it. And it's about, you know, building on top of your past experiences, starting there and continuing to learn and improve every time you do something new. And if you get in that mindset of smaller iterative changes, composable enables you to move faster because now I can do it in smaller pieces as I get there. Mm-hmm. And it gets you in that mindset that I don't need this giant monolithic rebuild every 3 years. And I push this on the website side. It's going to be applicable to any web formats. If you try to go through these huge big bang redesigns or rebuilds every 3 years, every 2 to 3 years, I'll use that example. I think 5 years is crazy nowadays. Mm-hmm. Even 2 to 3 years is getting crazy. You're going to fall behind on your competitors and the functionality and everything that you're doing. So if you could break to smaller pieces, focus on the things that matter most that need to be updated monthly or every 3 months, you can do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like you don't need to build your whole website every 3 years, or every month, there's pieces of your website that'll last 3 years and it'll be fine. But you can separate those things that need to be more iterative and push that forward. And I think that's where the power is. That's where we're taking this. And yeah, I think the analogy to on-prem versus cloud, I think helps illustrate that as well.
I think for a lot of people, composable might mean kind of microservice in direction. Or like people, I think, almost automatically we'll be thinking like, oh yeah, let's get rid of this monolithic thing. I think this is now starting to percolate in the community, that's going pure microservices and religiously is a really terrible idea, because you're shifting from you're just moving your complexity. Like now you used to have a monolith problem and now you have an orchestration problem. To think about this in a more pragmatic way and like to chunk out complexity and to say like, okay, you know, content management, it's not a new problem. We've been doing this for like since the dawn of the internet. We've been doing CMSs. Why would we go and reinvent this? Why would you in your own team start building your own? Let's just take something that exists with a big community, get a lot of runway out of that, and then layer stuff on top of that, and then build those like really interesting experiences that really delight developers. Build those on top of that, and maybe bring those in house, and focus your attention on what really is going to differentiate your developer experience in the market. This is coming into something I've been thinking about recently. Is sometimes developer experience is confused with developer marketing. Often people start talking about developer experience, they start thinking about delightful experiences. You know, I think there's a good amount of developer experience that's just boring. And I think that the really exciting stuff is not necessarily the bread and butter, but it can be useful. It can be very interesting for developer marketing. But that is then probably that layer that you build on top that's like uniquely fit with your API products, that fits with your infrastructure and how you're thinking about things, so that you can like make it all fit together, where your business model nicely fits in, and you can create this composed experience out of those pieces.
Yeah, I like to think about this. So I'm going to use the word dichotomy, because I was reading Extreme Ownership recently and it's really stuck in my head. I just really like the word. But like the dichotomy of the balance between monolithic and microservices, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to shift. And it's going to be this pendulum swing between the two back and forth. And what's right for you today isn't going to be right for you in a year, probably. Mm-hmm. So you need to be open to understand that, right? And, you know, going all monolithic or all microservices, both have downsides. And the happy medium is somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really important point that you call out here, Christoph, to, you know, just understand where you need to be in this, focus on it, and understand that's going to change. Like, it wasn't wrong when you did this 6 months ago, probably, but it might be wrong if I continue down that path and don't shift it now because markets change, products change, things change, attention changes. So I think it's a really important point to call out here. And, you know, it's why I really like the term composable as opposed to headless or decoupled, because mm-hmm. I can have both. And I need both to be successful in my organization, depending on what I'm working on. So, you know, I think it's really powerful to think about it in that way.
Yeah. Just do you also agree that if you think of building your solution composable, it's also sort of future proof? Because if new technologies, the world is going so fast, the digital world is going so fast. If a new solution comes in, if you can add it relatively easily in your solution, I think it's also more future-proof than going with the monolith or any other way.
Thank you for this conversation. I hope this was enlightening for our audience, for people that are out there trying to figure out, what should I do for making this developer portal? Should I build from scratch? Should I use a CMS? Should I use Drupal or PHP, God forbid? Then I hope this helps to give some ideas and to look at it a little bit more nuanced and less black and white. And if you have any questions about composable hosting solutions or about composable dev portals or about decoupled dev portals or anything like that, reach out to any three of us or all three at the same time. Happy to have further conversations about it. And I'd like to thank both you, Henk, and John for joining me, for talking on this topic and for giving it some limelight in the community so we can hopefully start some conversations about this. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. This episode of the Resilience Podcast was brought to you by Pronovix. You can learn more about our company at pronovix.com. And thank you for listening. And until next week.